2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to another DFS Army Bold Calls Fantasy Football Podcast, Corona Edition. My name is Kevin Allen. I'm your host, and I've got my man Season Long Says here with me, and we're going to break down the NFL Draft, fantasy implications, top 10 fantasy prospects going into the draft, and then later on, we will harshly judge Season Long Says on the accuracy of both his predictions, where these people play, and how these people play out, because you're supposed to know.
Well, you said, hey, good morning, good afternoon, whatever it is. You had said top 10. We're just going to try to get as many as we can. You know, we can even try to get the top 12, because most dynasty leagues are 12. Even most rookie drafts will be 12 teams. So we'll try to get through the first round from a non-super flex perspective, because obviously the QBs would get inflated and would push some of these guys out of the first round. So we can go just go through my rankings and then see how it shakes out after the draft, because obviously my ranks are going to shake up depending on landing spot this year more than ever.
I'm all about where the players land and what type of offenses, and I think that's going to have a massive effect on the value of a lot of these guys. And, you know, selfishly, I'm in a bunch of dynasty leagues and I'm trying to figure out, you know, should I be trading some of these picks in that first round? Am I going to get some studs? Can I turn around my team? You know, I came in second place in one of my dynasty leagues this year, and I was very disappointed. I was hoping for a true dynasty over there and just complete domination. And so, you know, when
it's
that happened,
it's hard to win your league even once. To win it twice in a row is it's very challenging. I mean, you know, obviously you got to have the skills as you do. But then, you know, there has to be some element of the players performing on the exact week you need them to. But it certainly is possible. Certainly
absolutely
possible.
And again, going into this draft, I was told by all of the experts that we've got a very deep draft coming up this year.
Yeah.
A lot of players, a lot of good players coming in. A lot of good talent, going to be able to get good players mid-first, late second, all throughout this draft. That's what I'm told.
Yep. And what's interesting enough is three of the running backs that I had first-round fantasy grades on went back to school. Travis Etienne from Clemson, Najee Harris from Alabama, and who the heck did I have on there? Who was the – oh, my God, I can't believe it slipped my mind. But, again, these guys are going to be in the top five for next year. So it's amazing that that it's still deep, and three guys went back.
You know, even with all of that, still solid draft. That's the general consensus. And what I want to do today is talk about some of these players, where they're ranked, and some possible landing.
By the
spots.
Way. It was Chuba Hubbard. He had the running back from Oklahoma State was the third guy that decided to go back that would have been in my top five. So
there we go. Look forward to next year, some more talent coming around. But key here is today we want to just look. We don't want to just look at the players themselves, because who the fuck cares? I want to know player, talent, projection, and then some predictions on where they could go, and then how much we like them more or less based on some of these possible destinations. So I'm going to start with what I believe is the consensus top overall player in this season's draft. And that's Jonathan Taylor. He's got all the buzz. Now, I'm not saying that's your top prediction, but I believe, you know, if you look at Fantasy Pros, for example, that's the, quote, consensus number one guy right now. Just by a little bit, beating out some of the other running backs, DeAndre Swift. So tell me a little bit about this prospect, Jonathan Taylor. And tell me about some teams. Like, are we looking at a three down super stud running back? Why has he shot up a lot of draft boards kind of late, because he wasn't a name I was hearing mid season? And what are some possible landing destinations for Jonathan Taylor?
Right. Well, there's a lot there, and let me start from the end. You'd ask why Jonathan Taylor shot up, had a late surge in the pre-draft rankings, and that's because he literally tore the roof off the combine with his speed score. I mean, he ran in the 4.3s. I mean, and at his size, I believe he's about 228 pounds. I mean, it's just an unbelievable athlete, and he's had the college production to go along with it. That said, he's not my number one running back, but it's not by much. I still have DeAndre Swift at the top of my running back ranks, as you and I have talked about all offseason long, and I'm going to keep him there. I'm not going to say I have take lock in a sense where I want to see where everybody lands, but to me, that DeAndre Swift and there's another player which we'll get to, they're bulletproof in a sense where no matter what situation they fall into, I believe that they're going to be premier NFL backs. Now, Jonathan Taylor, again, you're talking about nitpicking near the top. I mean, he's my number three running back overall, so there's not much difference. He's well within that tier of elite running backs from this class. The problem, as I see it with Taylor, is he doesn't have the same lateral agility as the other guys. He's more straight line, one cut and go. But, you know, again, we're nitpicking at the top here. Also, Jonathan Taylor, the one thing that was brought to my attention that I went back and looked at was there was a fumbles. It was about 15 lost fumbles in over the span of his college career. And we know at the NFL level that that is a problem. Yes, that's fixable, but also that could get you off the field pretty quickly. Now, again, remember, we're nitpicking at the top here. Now, the way I see Jonathan Taylor is also interesting that you're talking about a great running back, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's the overall top fantasy producer. But look at someone like Todd Gurley. Todd Gurley, with Jeff Fisher and without Jeff Fisher, not really, you know, like an okay running back and the best running back in the league. I think that's what could happen to Jonathan Taylor in the wrong situation, where as the other two that we're going to talk about today, Swift and Dobbins, those guys, to me, absolute bulletproof no matter what situation they land in.
I mean, for me, automatically, I'm always looking at situation. I think is very critical for running back because their time frames for success are shorter than wide receivers. You know, wide receiver's career just lasts longer. So with a running back, if you go to, for example, some shitty team that's going to be a loser for the next 3 years, you really have to take that into account.
Yes.
When you're looking at their draft stock, because one of my always theorems is we want running backs from teams that win games. The other thing we want out of running backs are players that catch passes. So,
well, there you go. And let me stop you there, because that's an important point to underline. And that's why Swift and Dobbins are bulletproof prospects. They check those boxes for you, even if they end up on a poor team, because the pass catching can get them out of it. Now, people were quick to point to that Jonathan Taylor didn't catch the football a lot in college, but then at the combine showed that he has that skill set. And Jonathan Taylor was a workhorse running back. I mean, they loaded him up on carries, and the way I defend him after I just pushed him down my rankings is that the reason he didn't catch the football was likely because they just kept handing it off to him, and there just wasn't there wasn't the market share, the chunk of the pie that could go towards the pass catching. People also point out, Geek, that Jonathan Taylor was overworked in college. He had this massive workload. I don't buy that at all, and I see you shaking your head. You agree with me. To me, that's a plus. That shows that he stood up versus that workload. So
yeah, I don't worry about that. That is not a critique that bothers me. Yeah, my main concern, though, is the speculation that because he could catch a football at the combine means that he can run routes at the NFL level and catch passes. I don't believe that those two things are the same. I think anybody can catch a football at the combine. I'm pretty sure if you put me at the combine, you throw it to me, I'm going to catch it.
He looked pretty natural doing it, though. I got to say, it's not one of my concerns for him. You know, again, if he comes in the NFL and catches 38 to 46 footballs, you're fine with that. And again, he is going to be a little more landing spot dependent, not to fall out of that tier, but could he easily get bolted up to the number one overall running back for me if he lands in the right spot? Probably. I'd probably still take DeAndre Swift because, like I said earlier, Swift.
Let's fast forward. What are some possible landing spots for Jonathan Taylor Give me some teams that have been I don't know how you know who's sniffing around anything because the fucking there's no team meetings going on. There's Corona. Yeah. There's social distancing. We don't know. In the old days, you'd have teams bring guys in for a day for an interview. You'd get an idea. Now, how do we know?
Yeah. So, I mean, all we can do is look at the teams that need running backs and understand that, you know, from people talking to scouts. So we're a curator of information here. Obviously, we're not talking to the coaches ourselves. We're studying. We're listening to keeping our ear to the grind based on the sources that we have. All right. And those resources. So if you look at the teams that are most in need of a running back or most likely to add a running back in the first two rounds. Okay, and that's where these elite running backs are going to go. Maybe in the first round, doubtful, but definitely there's going to be about four of them that go in the second round at least. Okay, so let's start with Kansas City. Do they need a running back? No. But at pick 32 in the NFL draft, if they don't trade that pick away, that you know they have Damian Williams who hasn't stayed healthy. They just signed DeAndre Washington. That could be a spot. Okay, that would be pretty interesting.
I mean, you got to be happy with any player involved with the Kansas City offense.
Right. So they have the last pick in the first round and the second to last pick in the second round. So those Kansas City is definitely in the market, I think, for a running back because they're not weak anywhere. So they could make a luxury pick like that. The second spot has got to be Tampa Bay, Geek. I think that's actually probably the priority spot. You can't think that they've been happy with Ronald Jones. You know, that Bruce Arians has said he's going to be looking for a pass catching running back. And, you know, he's probably looking for a three down running back. So that could be any of the elite running backs. Now, Tampa Bay owns an early pick in the second round. I doubt they would use their first round pick on him. It's too early. So, you know, Tampa Bay is with pick 40 something. I think they have. I don't have it in front of me. That's a prime spot. Atlanta with Todd Gurley there signed on a 1 year deal. Could be looking to run the wheels off him, and you know maybe and have one of these elite rookies there. I mean, they're a good team that's ready to roll. So that's a good spot. Now, I know now that the Rams acquired an additional second round pick. They have two picks in the mid round. That could be a spot where they add somebody. So. Those teams, there's speculation that Arizona could add one of the running backs. I don't think that's a good idea.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Right. I mean, where else? Do you think the Colts might add someone in the second round? Do you
think
that's
the Colts
possible?
Are a prime candidate to add somebody. I mean, probably one of the top candidates.
Why, though? See, I've heard that a lot. You have Marlon Mack there, who's a good runner of the football, and you have Nyheim Hines, who is, I think, a pretty damn good a pass-catching running back. So you think they just want one guy that could do it all?
Yeah, I think they're giving up on – I don't agree with this Nyheim Hines nonsense, and I do think the teams want an all-purpose player. I also don't think that Marlon Mack, they believe in him enough to be the answer. He's hurt too frequently, and I think the NFL is starting to learn that the one-dimensional skill set back is really problematic because you're tipping your opponent to what you're doing when you play Marlon Mack in there, and you know you're not going to throw it to him. It's a senseless reason. I don't understand it. It's a stupid thing. You know, it's the strangest for me that the Patriots and Bill Belichick would do this. If you're about not tipping your hand. The NFL is all about, I don't want the defense to know what I'm here to do. And you're tipping your hand by having a player who's not multidimensional. You're literally informing your opponent pretty much what you're about to do here.
Yeah, no. And now you're making the case for my ranks. They're going to come out for DeAndre Swift to be number one overall running back.
Okay? I absolutely do. I want not just for your rank purposes and not just for the purpose of the fact that the NFL, how the fuck have they not realized that tipping your hand is stupid? As a matter of fact, you saw it in the playoffs with the Patriots last year where they didn't want to play James White anymore. They didn't want to play Sony Michel. They brought in Rex Burkhead, featured him because they realized, I believe it was the Chargers game, they realized that their opponent knew exactly what the fuck they were doing when they had the other guys in. They wanted the mystery. So I think this idea of one-dimensional backs is ridiculous. And a guy like Marlon Mack, he's really, really like, that's a problem. That's a problem. You got to be able to pass unless you're Derrick Henry and you can bowl over opponents to the point where it's worthwhile. So tell me about DeAndre. So we talk about Jonathan Taylor. I think the landing spots are probably going to be about the same for all of these guys, right? The running backs, because the same
Swift, the NFL guys liked Swift the best. They're seeing it how we're talking about it right here. I believe that Swift will be the first running back, and there's off the board, and I think there's a decent chance he can go in the first round. Miami's got 3 picks. They've been speculated to.
That's not a good landing spot.
I'm not sure about that. Why? I mean, why do you think? Just because the offensive line?
Losing team. Just a bad, bad team. The good thing about Miami
is... They were good for fantasy, though.
Full workload. No... Their running game was not good for fantasy. But the good thing about Miami is the running back there will get the whole workload. The bad thing is they have not shown that they can run the football no matter who's back there. They had Kenyon Drake. They couldn't do shit with him. Now... Let's talk about other landing spots for these guys, because that part interests me almost more. Where is the landing spot that we want? Say I've got a player.
Tampa Bay.
I've got number one pick. I'm number one.
Tampa Bay. I mean, because whoever comes in there presumably could. I mean, it's Ronald Jones. We said it a little bit earlier, but Ronald Jones. They haven't been happy with him. They're not committed to him in any way. This is not the regime that drafted him. They have the right pick. They have an early pick in round two. That seems to be the sweet spot for running backs. A premium. They don't need to spend their early first round pick on him. They can go wait for the second round. So let's say DeAndre Swift or Jonathan Taylor or my number two running back J.K. Dobbins out of Ohio State lands there. I mean, you got that guy has to be the 1-1 in many rankings. He'll move him up because the opportunity, the pathway, and then you have Tom Brady there, who could throw the football to those receivers. The offensive line is decent enough.
I think Tom Brady there means more winning, and more winning means goodness from the running back position, regardless of anything else. Brady will lead to more wins. Winning teams produce at the running back position better than other teams. So essentially, do you believe that Tampa Bay second round pick running back will be the first pick in your dynasty draft this year, regardless of which of these three guys it is?
It would have to be, I just can't see when I'm on the clock and say I have the 1-1 in a non-Superflex league, I can't see why I wouldn't take DeAndre Swift, regardless of landing. It would have to be like a negative landing.
What if DeAndre Swift goes to the Raiders and they want to use him as a shake and bake?
Right. I mean, they just put first-round capital into Josh Jacobs last year. So, I mean, that's almost an unimaginable situation.
Yeah, crazy. But I'm just saying, if he gets...
Right, something like that.
The Lions, and the Lions are like, hey, we like Kerryon Johnson, but he said he don't like to run the football that much, so we need a compliment.
DeAndre Swift, if he lands in the Lions, would still be my one. It would be hard for me to go off of that. I would probably pivot to Dobbins at that point. Again, I love Taylor. I just think that there's real danger if Taylor's in a wrong situation that he could have happened to him what happened to Todd Gurley with Jeff Fisher. I don't think it could happen to the other two guys. I think it's way less likely. That's why. Now, if Taylor ends up in the right spot, air quotes, okay, then he would have to be in the premium situation. The other two guys would have to be in bad situations for me to flip them. Now, again, I don't want to have take lock, but that's how I'm seeing it right now.
That's fair. All right, so let's continue on with the running back position. As you've got through the first three, these three guys, consensus 1, 2, or 3, you can mix it, you can match it. It's very, very clear who the top running backs are, according to most experts, according to the draft watchers. Let's look a little bit deeper because, hey, I need a running back.
Just running backs here because I think
we'll talk wide receivers, but I want to focus on the running back position first. So a couple other names that are listed, I'd like you to rank these guys for me according to your rankings because, again, Taylor Swift, Dobbins, your top three. You've got Swift first, Dobbins second, Taylor third. Correct. Doesn't matter. Mix it up a little bit depending on who you ask.
Yep. But and there's no wrong answer there. I have no good
ranking. There we go.
If you wanted to switch that up in some way, I wouldn't be able to tell you you're wrong.
And, of course, we are pre-NFL draft here. So after the draft, we'll get a little more in depth in terms of situational understandings. So
I like
to get my head right before the draft. So the other guys are Cam Akers, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who some people really, really love. I think Edwards-Helaire is one of these guys that sometimes shows up as a top three pick for some experts. And then the drop-off seems pretty dramatic. So give me the next two guys. What is a breakdown of Akers. Yeah. Give me a breakdown of Edwards-Helaire. Are these guys three down backs? Do they catch passes?
Okay, so you nailed it on the nail on the head right here by saying this is the next tier for me. Okay, those two guys are the clear next tier, and then there's, you know, the next one after that. So,
well, it's a big drop off from there. No more first round running back picks in your
right, with all the depth at receiver. You're right; those are probably the guys that and there are the first round running backs. Now, let's start with Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Was at LSU, caught 50 plus passes last year. And in college, I mean, that would be the NFL equivalent of like 80 passes. I mean, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Are you okay over there? I see you looking around. You all right?
Oh, yeah, no.
Oh, okay, I thought you were nervous or something. I thought your sound cut off. All right.
No, I was Clyde looking at any live comments or anything.
Yeah. Do you want me to put them up or just let's keep rolling?
Put it up there.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, LSU, elite pass catcher. The problem is it was only one year of production, but, you know, listen, the magnitude of the sample was
elite pass catcher.
Elite.
That gets my spidey sense tingling.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know what his comp is for me? I have my comp that I put in my my write up is Maurice Jones-Drew, because he's compact to the ground. He can catch the football. He's not like long speed, but he has elite side to side and footwork agility. He's the kind of guy that's going to get you a lot of like 12 and 18 yard runs, and probably won't have more than one 40-yard run a season, but he's going to get you a lot of those. He makes guys miss in both the backfield and in the open field. So he ran, I think it was in the four, was it, man, I should have had my combine speed, but it was 4.6 or something like that, and people were down on him as a running speed, but that's not his game. If you watch him, he was, again, a good agility, good spin move, and an elite pass catcher, and he performed in an NFL pro-style offense at LSU. So I've seen him as high as 1. I think that's very aggressive. I have him at 4, and in the right landing spot, he could move up. If he's the Kansas City Chiefs running back and Damian Williams gets hurt, I mean, I'm happy there. So that's Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
What about Cam Akers?
Yeah, that's where we're going next. So Cam Akers was at Florida State. Now, Cam Akers is a converted high school quarterback, so the guy can throw the football. He actually became a running back once he was in college. That was the position that he's offered. So I don't know if you down here, we watch a lot of Florida State, a lot of Gators, also a lot of Florida football, and that team was just not good. So Cam Akers, the other teams were just game planning for him. I mean, he literally had nowhere to run, and he was still very productive. That's what's interesting about Cam Akers. I mean, literally, he had one of the worst offensive lines in the country at that level of football. He can do it all, three down back. Now, he's going to be a very polarizing prospect, because he hasn't developed some of the nuances of reading offensive lines, because he hasn't been playing the position more than 3 years. Now, 3 years is a lot, and those are the type of things that can be coached in the NFL. He's certainly one of the better prospects, and he's going to, in the right situation or even in a medium situation, it belongs solidly in that tier. So to answer your question, three down skill set, okay, converted quarterback, super athlete, and I think he's going to be. I think personally, he's going to be the landing spot for either Atlanta or the Rams. Now, you could say that about all these guys, but because someone could say, "Hey, why would not in Tampa? Tampa's right down there in South Florida. Where why would they?" So, yeah, I again, it's hard to make a promise on where these guys will go. But Cam Akers, it's if you watch the tape, you see he gets caught up a lot, and that's because he just had a bad team, but three down skill set guy, super athlete. I'm really excited. If you have like pick 7 or 8 in your dynasty draft this year, oh my God. And you land Cam Akers, it's like getting a top 3 pick, top 4 pick in any other year. Cause those now, wide receivers are going to push him down the board a little.
I'm going to throw my personal caveat onto this breakdown and across the board for all these running backs. We're breaking this down ahead of the NFL draft. Where a player is drafted in terms of the round goes a long way to determining the amount of opportunity they might get with their team. So you give me Cam Akers in the second round. Somebody took him there. Somebody liked him that much. That's worth a lot more to me than a great situation, but he only came off the board in the fourth round. Talent aside, there is importance and protection that you get based on where the player is drafted. Their draft capital determines a lot of how much a team is going to try to make sure that they become a solid player. Some fourth rounder can look good, but he's going to need his talent to explode through in order to really get the opportunity.
And the perfect example of that is Philip Lindsay. He displayed the talent 2 years in a row, and because he's undrafted with no draft capital, they're still treating him like a second-class citizen. They, quote, gave his money to Melvin Gordon instead of renewing his contract. So
he's looked right on. All about it. Yeah. So it's just important to understand when you're doing these drafts. Like, I saw a lot of people last season get enamored with, for example, just some sixth-round picks that were who's the guy from Kansas City who was getting a little hype?
Oh, Darwin Thompson.
Yeah. The guy's a sixth rounder. I was in leagues with sharp players where Darwin Thompson went like sixth overall in a rookie draft. And it's very, I was like,
not us. We were laughing at that.
Yeah. We were like, this guy's a fucking idiot. Why? Yeah. I like Darwin Thompson potentially because he's a running back on the Chiefs. And I want, quote, Chiefs running back on my team. But a sixth rounder, man, he could get cut. Like, he could look great in game two of the preseason. He gets cut. You don't want to be messing with those guys in the first round. Yeah. You need, if you want to build a dynasty, you need talent and players who will be given the opportunity. So let's move over to the wide receiver position. Very, very deep.
Oof. I mean, this is as deep as it is. It's going to be, it's going to be even more elite in 21 based on some of the stuff I've done.
Listen, I don't care about 2020. I got two picks in the first round. First round picks.
Yeah. No, what I'm just saying is that there's a strategy involved here. What I'm saying is that those running backs we name, all of them could get drafted ahead of the elite wide receivers. If you're a sharp dynasty player, you might say to yourself, hey, next year I might not be able to get one of these great running backs. Okay. So I'm going to take a running back now. So I could see that happening. But you know, and I know that when you draft dynasty, the best thing to do is go best player available, regardless of positional need, because that's how you build a team, is by building talent. And if you could always trade out of that later.
And you never know. So you never know. So here's the thing. We've got some really, really elite wide receivers. And I feel like this wide receiver class is better than the last few that we've had. From a hype perspective, from a talent perspective, and from a lack of quality wide receivers in the NFL, so lots of good places to go perspective right now. So I think there's a lot of reasons why I'm excited. I rarely get excited to take a wide receiver in the first round of my dynasty draft because I think it's the hardest. Although the players last longer when you hit, it's the hardest position to predict. We saw it last year. N'Keal Harry.
It takes them time to develop too.
You never know, but sometimes they never develop. And so you end up with your remember Kevin White? You remember Chris Coleman, first round pick. You remember Dobson, first round pick, first round fucking
bust. You're talking about Josh Doctson and then what Corey Coleman.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just remembering these names of first rounders. You were taken fifth, sixth overall, and they busted. So it's much more likely to have a complete bust from the wide receiver position. It's pretty rare that you grab like a top three running back that is hype that completely busts. Although some of them don't end up as good players, it's less common for them to completely. They get a chance and it's more rare that they completely bust. So let's talk about the two top guys at the wide receiver. Would you say it's a three-man tier or a two-man tier? Because, you know, everybody talking about CeeDee Lamb and Jerry Jeudy. Jerry Judy's my guy. CeeDee Lamb, I think he's your guy. Mm-hmm. They got Henry Ruggs hanging out super fast. Not very productive. What's the story with these guys? And is it a two-tier or a three-tier initial thought process for this wide receiver position?
Okay. Well, the three players you're talking about are CeeDee Lamb, Jerry Jeudy, and you're talking about Henry Ruggs. Now, I think Lamb and Jeudy belong at the top of that class in any order that, you know, we'll debate that out in a moment. I have Ruggs third, and many don't even have him there. Many have him even lower than that. So I think in my tiers, I'll have him at the bottom part of that top tier, but for our argument's sake, and you don't want to go too against consensus, I think he belongs more in the next tier, as the top of the next tier. So I think really, because when you're on the clock, In your dynasty draft, you're going to be deciding between Judy and Lamb if you need a receiver. Now, there's some talk in the real NFL draft that a team could sneak up and take Ruggs as the first wide receiver off the board, and that's because he will help a real NFL team. Every NFL team can use a 4.27 speed guy that has rock-solid hands and, you know,
and
could take
the comparable Tyreek Hill.
Yeah. I mean, that's the high ceiling. It's, you know, DeSean Jackson, Will Fuller, any of these guys that have elite speed, great hands, and superior route running. Say again?
Always injured?
No, he's not an injury guy. And I mean, despite his son.
Can we say the bottom end of the comparator is Ross from Cincinnati?
John Ross. Like, just a fast guy. John Ross is, yeah. You know, I mean, that's the only comparable. But yeah, I mean, anyone who's super fast, but he profiles more like Tyreek Hill than those other guys that you named. So that's why I think he could, in the college production, was they just, you know, it was the target share that they threw to him, the type of offense they run. Think about that he was at Alabama and all the Alabama running backs, they never have like this huge market share of touches or of production. So, okay. So going back, so it's Judy or Lamb. It's pick your flavor of what you like. Now, Judy's the more polished route runner, the higher floor prospect. All right. Think of him more like Amari Cooper was, or good in the middle of the field, good strong hands, right? Whereas CeeDee Lamb, who's been often compared to DeAndre Hopkins, a little slighter frame, can work the outside, electric playmaking. So Lamb,
DeAndre
probably,
Hopkins slash yeah. Odell Beckham Jr.
Sure. I think that's a fair comparison. And I think Lamb probably has the higher ceiling, but not by enough to discount how high ceiling of Judy has. I mean, we talked about these guys last year. I told you Jerry Judy was my number one overall in Dynasty, and it was going to be hard to push me off that. Just the importance of the running back position in fantasy, I've moved him down slightly. But for me, if I'm on the clock, I'm taking Judy. I love Lamb. I think he, you know, it's a more exciting player, but I think the higher floor combined with the high ceiling, for right now, I'm going to put Judy there, but I could be flipped based on landing spot. If one of them goes to a poor quarterback situation and the other one goes to a really good quarterback situation, you know, I mean, that's going to flip them for me.
I think landing spot is so critical for the wide receiver position. It's not even funny.
Oh, yeah.
What I mean, one of these guys might end up on the Jets. Do you want a Jets wide receiver?
Yeah, I mean, is that possible? Yes. You and I forget if it was on a pod or it was off a pod. I told you I really think the Jets are going O-line and they're going to look for someone like Michael Pittman, the wide receiver, in the second round, cuz I mean that guy is just he would be in the first. Michael Pittman, we'll get to him after. Looks like he could be a first rounder in any other class. He's just going to be in the second round cuz of how
deep
it is.
Let's talk about landing spots then and some potential landing spots for these guys that would affect things in a positive or negative way. So, we've got our two top guys. Judy, a little more polished route runner. Lamb, a little bit more of the explosive guy, big play guy, explosive. I'm a Judy fan.
Yeah, good reason to be.
You know that. You know I'm all about Jerry Judy. But let's talk about some landing spots. What are some teams that need a wide receiver?
Let's go down the line. Let's go
Houston
down the line.
Comes to mind.
Yeah, but they're not picking until the second round. They don't have a first round pick. Okay, so Lamb and Judy are both going in the top.
Hold up. You know I need to fucking talk about
this. Go ahead. I'll step aside. Go ahead.
You trade away DeAndre Hopkins for a fucking corpse running back that costs too much money. You're getting rid of draft picks for garbage. What are they doing over there? Bill O'Brien, I get it. You made the playoffs. But you are ruining this team with your terrible decision making. I don't know. And now Brandon Cooks, the most inconsistent wide receiver in the NFL. That's your replacement. If I'm a Houston fan, this is what I have to look forward to. Brandon fucking Cooks and his four receptions a game. And Will Fuller, they can't get his hammy untightened up. Hello. Hold on. I'm not done. Okay. Bill O'Brien, how about bringing in a fucking yoga instructor to teach Will Fuller how to stretch his hammy out before the game? Okay. You go like this. You do the dog. You do the downward facing. As a matter of fact, I know some Stacy Sislop, fucking nutritionist, eat food so you don't fucking mess up your hammy every time you run out on the field. Three games. That's all I can expect from Will Fuller. And I blame Bill O'Brien and his terrible fucking general management skills.
Yeah, no, I mean, you said, I mean, that's actually well said. As much as you were trying to kind of put on an entertaining soliloquy there for the people, which you did, you happen to be right. And I don't think that, you know, it's very difficult to be the general manager and the coach because your interests are in conflict. And Bill Belichick has done it well, and meaning that the coach's interest
has
is
he
in
done
winning.
It well? Hold on a second. Has he done it well?
They,
has
I mean,
he
they
done it well. Did in Bill 20- Belichick not put together a lack of talent on offense year after year and just make up for it with awesome coaching?
Well, six Super Bowls in 2 decades. I would say he did it well. Let's look
great
at the
coaching.
Results.
Great quarterback. Yeah. Lack
well, anyway,
of talent.
What I was going to say is that that the GM's interest is long-term viability of the team, and a coach's is short-term. And I think Bill Belichick has done that. He's cut players before in their prime yeah. to you know when, before they were aged out and became too expensive. So
I'm accepting that. That's very yes. true. And he has definitely traded back, and he has definitely put the interest of the team very frequently ahead of it. Yeah, so that's fair.
Yep. And I was going to say, essentially, that what is the acquisition of Brandon Cooks by Houston really say to you? It says that they think they made a mistake probably with DeAndre Hopkins, because why would you trade away for an unknown, basically the draft pick, and then trade that draft pick for a known, you know, it shows that you, more or less, you traded DeAndre Hopkins for David Johnson and Brandon Cooks. And if that was in our fantasy league, we would probably veto that trade.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, it was, I mean, O'Brien came out and said he didn't want to be here, so we got rid of him. That's his style. I get it. You know, all right, so that's going to be your style of coaching. But hold out a minute, man. You can get somebody good for DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, I mean, look what the Bills got for Stephon Diggs. They got a first-round pick. Hey, by the way,
is a superior player to Stephon Diggs by quite a bit, but yet the Vikings got a haul for Diggs. Hopkins, they got a fucking bag of beans. It was a disaster. All right, let me wipe it out. We're getting away from the draft.
All right, we're getting away from it. By the way,
what
you
about
asked
Houston? Them? Are they the guy?
First round pick.
So by who is the first round picking team? That
do you want me to go over it?
Yeah.
All right. So, by the way, the other first round bust in recent wide receiver was the one we were trying to think of was Laquon Treadwell. He was another first round fantasy bust.
Oh, that goes back a little bit, but I mean, yeah.
I mean, not that far. Four years.
The list: Breshad Perriman.
Well, he's now come on. Now he's a fantasy asset. But yeah, all right. So
you already dropped him in your fantasy league 2 years ago.
Right,
somebody
right,
else
right.
has him.
Right. That's true. That's true.
You know,
all
he's
right.
not on my team anymore.
So let's go through the draft order and let's not assume any trades. So let's just go down. So Cincinnati, we know, is taking Burrow. We believe the Redskins, if they don't trade out of that space, they're going to take a defensive player, Detroit defensive player. So I'm just going down the list. The first team on my list that could possibly take a receiver was Arizona at 8. I don't think they will anymore. I don't think Jacksonville will at 9. Is it possible Cleveland does at 10? Sure, but like you said. Okay, so now we're at the Jets at 11, Las Vegas at 12, and San Francisco at 13. I think there's going to be three receivers that go in a row right there.
You think San Francisco's taking... All right, we know the Jets need a wide receiver, and you've said maybe they'll take an offensive line. I think they'll take a wide receiver there, make a splash.
Yeah, I think, like I said, I'm saying possibility. I shouldn't have said
Raiders,
I think that because I told
Vegas,
you. Vegas?
Yes, Los
they
Angeles?
Are... Right, this
Oakland and what wherever the fuck they're from,
Las Vegas,
Vegas,
yeah,
definitely,
yeah, they're taking
most need at wide receiver of any team, but they also need a quarterback.
Yeah, but they okay. So even though we agree they need a quarterback, so let's not put our feelings into it. They signed Marcus Mariota to a high end backup deal. I think they're giving him $8 million. So their plan is if Carr doesn't work out to go Mariota. So they're not drafting a quarterback there. They're just not doing it.
Being a Raiders fan is one step above being a Jets fan, and it's a very, very small step.
But again, it's going back to Mayock, the GM, he had said from the pre-draft process going back to the Mariota-Winston draft that he always liked Mariota. So we know what they're doing. And this is what I was going to say is that this is the situation I think it's interesting that the Raiders, if they are the first team to take a wide receiver, they could jump the consensus. And that's where Henry Ruggs out of Alabama, the speedster, could go. I could see it. I'm not saying it's likely to happen, but that is interesting. So, but we agree one of Lamb or Judy will likely go there. I don't think the Jets will. And then the next pick is San Francisco. Now this pick, Geek, was owned by the Indianapolis Colts, pick 13. What they did was everyone suspected they were going to take a quarterback here. They traded the pick to acquire DeForest Buckner the one of the elite defensive players on San Francisco because they had a redundancy. So the San Francisco traded away a defensive player in order to acquire this pick. To me, that says we're going to take offense. We traded away defense. We're not going to take defense there. So that means with Emmanuel Sanders leaving, you have Deebo Samuel and you have George Kittle. Okay, you have Jalen Hurd, who was a fourth round pick last year. Upside for sure. He looked good in the preseason, didn't then got hurt. And then you have Dante Pettis, who's basically been discarded.
They so to like me, you mentioned the name Dante Pettis or even Marquise Goodwin. Right. They don't believe in those guys.
You have Deebo, who we all agree is an alpha dog, but profile is more like an Aquan Bolden, the perfect secondary guy. So that says CD Lamb to me right there.
That's fair. I mean, I could see it. I would. If CD Lamb goes, any player that goes to San Francisco as a pass catcher, that's a massive downgrade for me. And, you know, speaking of San Francisco, you know, they have 17 running backs over there that they scroll through. But wouldn't it be interesting if they flip the script, took a running back?
Not at pick 13.
I don't think they're going to do it.
But too smart of a team.
Or even in 2.13 and got one of these guys.
They don't own 2.13. That's a Colts pick.
Oh, okay. All right. So they're at the end. All right. So forget that, or maybe at the end of the first round. But at the end of the second.
With their next pick. The end of the second, first round pick.
That would be interesting. But all right, I will tell you if whoever goes to San Francisco as a wide receiver gets a massive downgrade from me. That team does not throw the football enough to produce points from the wide receiver position to what I need. I hope it's one of these. I hope it's CD Lamb, and then I hope the person in front of me in the draft takes CD Lamb.
San Francisco has pick 31, just so you know. They have 13.
They went to Super Bowl. They're a good team. So I hope that somebody else takes that guy, because you will not see me draft in the first round of my dynasty draft a wide receiver from San Francisco. I'm sorry, I get the talent part of it, but I'll just take the next guy.
All right. So where do you want to go with this? Do you want me to kind of rattle off
year? Let's keep going. Let's think of who else might take these guys. I think it's more important to understand not just the talented player, but how important the situation is, because again, San Francisco for me, that's a fade. You pick him
up. So let's say these guys go, it goes to form where San Francisco and Vegas take those two top tier guys, right? Tampa is on the clock at 14. I don't think they're going to take a skill spot there. I told you they need a running back, but I think they'll wait till the next round.
Could go offensive line, protect Brady.
Yes, correct. They could go defense to improve there.
Cornerback over there.
So this is the next interesting spot, 15, Denver Broncos. This has been well documented, but I couldn't agree with this one more. Usually I'm not with the consensus. This one I am. This is the Henry Ruggs spot if he doesn't go earlier. Okay, Henry Ruggs, the speedster to go to Denver would be the perfect fit. Drew Lock has that cannon arm. It's a perfect complement to Cortland Sutton's skill set, which is the outside. You have Noah Fant that can run the middle of the field. Is real sure-handed, came on strong last year. To me, this screams instant starter right here. Henry Ruggs is a very cerebral player. This would be the perfect landing spot for him in all of football.
All right, let's play a game of assumptions here. Assuming we're right, San Francisco, you've got Las Vegas. They take CD Lamb. San Francisco grabs Jerry Jeudy, and Denver takes Henry Ruggs.
Mm.
Now you're on the clock, and you've got to choose one of these wide receivers.
Right.
Knowing their landing spot, who are you taking, and in what order are you taking these three guys?
So my order wouldn't change. It would still go Jeudy, Lamb, then Ruggs. Again, it's, you know,
you're not the San Francisco fade that I am.
No, I believe in, I understand why. I do get why, but it's the talent. Again, these are elite prospects with a chance to really be special in the NFL, and with good coaching in San Francisco, I believe they'll find, if they're going to take someone at 13 and give up DeForest Buckner to get there, they're going to find a way to get this guy the football. And, you know, George Kittle, he's great for a tight end, but he's not a 140 target guy. You know, he's still going to get, you know,
if he got 140 targets, they'd have to have Jimmy Garoppolo and the second guy in there throwing it, because Jimmy G might only throw 140 passes over the course of an entire football season.
I'm not convinced Jimmy G is going to be there more than another year or two anyway. So
we'll see. Jimmy G's a bad player. I think he's good. I think they just run an offense that doesn't want to throw the football.
What was interesting, and I know you always goof on me for talking about the backup QBs in San Francisco, but Nick Mullins really impressed me when he came in last year. Now, hold on one second. On Mike Lombardi's podcast, by the way, if you're looking, everyone's looking for more podcasts to listen to other than the DFS Army one. Mike Lombardi, who is a GM, is a really great podcaster as well. The GM Shuffle, it's called. He has some good tidbits on there. Some of them I bring to this podcast, but he said that Kyle Shanahan told him that they got about three calls from three different teams on Nick Mullins this offseason, and they've said no to all of them. So I don't know what that signals other than they're going to have Nick Mullins on a couple more years on a rookie contract. I think that Jimmy G is on a shorter leash than most think, and I think Kyle's looking for an excuse to play Nick Mullins, because why wouldn't you take a second round pick for your backup QB? I think he was offered something as high as a second rounder, and he said no.
I would accept that offer if it were me. So yeah, that's very interesting. All right, so we've gone through the top three running backs. We've gone through the top three wide receivers. We've talked about some possible landing spots, good and bad. Now let's get to the kind of second half of this first round of your dynasty draft. Starting to get a little wild west over here. Not sure what to do next. Landing spot, very important. There are some running backs who are interesting. There are more wide receivers names that you'll hear floating around. I'll throw some out there. You've got Justin Jefferson coming out of LSU. Looks pretty good.
Pro ready. He'll be a first round real draft pick.
You think he's a first round real draft pick? What is an NFL player comparison to Justin Jefferson?
Justin Jefferson, I mean, he has real sure hands. I'm trying to think of what he doesn't really have any flaws. I mean, he's got elite production.
What are his metrics looking like?
Let's look him up because I don't know them offhand, but he had a really good combine. He's one of the guys that stock went up in the combine. He did everything really well.
4.43 40 at the combine.
Yep. By the way, you're popping a little bit.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I got a little close there.
Get excited. So yeah, 4.43 was amazing.
Man, reading
what was his three cone drill? Does it say there?
I don't have all of that. I'm not looking at a very
sure-handed. Elite production in that LSU system. He is going to be. I could see him landing like late in the first round, and someone like the Eagles, something like that, would be interesting. Again, he's good.
That's a good mention. The Eagles are a great landing spot for whoever goes there. They had some real misses last year. I think Arcega Whiteside is a bust at this point, or borderline a bust. They really lack wide receiver talent on that team. That is a spot where I'm looking to pay more for whatever wide receiver winds up on that team, because they're so lacking of a number one wide receiver. I love that.
Yeah. I mean, that I think would be a really good spot for him. Here's some of the, I just pulled up my notes on him. He's basically, he's a red zone weapon. He's a ball tracker. He's a quality route runner. He's got enough speed, like we just said, to get down the field, and he's a good teammate. I don't know, that you don't get points for a good teammate in fantasy, but the guys are going to like him on whatever team he goes on, and he's adaptable. He'll fit into
202 pounds. Not a big guy.
That's good NFL size, man. That's good NFL size.
Who's about that size? Give me a comparable. Is that
he's 6'1"? What's his weight? 200 pounds.
Yeah, 6'1", 200 pounds. Are we talking like Larry Fitzgerald?
No, Larry Fitzgerald is an absolute monster, like an absolute monster. As far as like NFL size, I would say that's close to like Marvin Jones. Marvin Jones is about 6'2", 200, and I think that's a really good comp for Justin Jefferson. Sure-handed, like that's the type of player you're going to get with him. Would you say peak Marvin Jones? You'd be happy to have him on your real NFL team and certainly on your fantasy team. Don't think about Marvin Jones now. Think about Marvin Jones from like 3 years ago, where he was literally like wide receiver 14 for like two or three years in a row.
He had a couple good years. You're not crying over it, but that's not who I'm hoping I get when I'm drafting somebody in the first round either.
Well,
I'm hoping for better than peak Marvin Jones.
I mean, that's, I mean, I'm being realistic about it. You're talking about a quality NFL starter who could be, you know, your wide receiver two in fantasy for you. You're not going to always get a wide receiver one. Now, is there upside for more? Absolutely. But that's more of a, it looks like I really threw
peak Alshon Jeffrey.
I mean, peak Alshon Jeffrey, and that peak was very short. No, because Jeffrey was a tall, lanky wide receiver, just different. So, like I said, I think Marvin Jones would be a better comp for him based on what to expect.
Let's move on to another name here. Jalen Reagor, moving up draft boards right now. Pretty well the consensus, you know, third tier of the wide receiver position here, along with probably Jefferson and maybe Trey Higgins and Denzel Mims. So
So Denzel Mims, that would be my next guy. See, I have Mims as my number four.
Okay, there we go.
I have Mims as my four. Jefferson is my five. And Shane, who I do the Flex Network podcast with, he's higher on Reagor than I am. Jalen Reagor, I don't see him going in the first round, but I could see like him landing on like the Jaguars in like the early second round. Now, Jalen Reagor
Let me give you some numbers for Mims, because I do have his statistics.
You're talking about Mims, right?
Mims, okay, right?
So we're going to be talking Mims now, right?
4.38.
Yeah. You know, that's insane, right? Not bad. Very, that's insane.
Fast guy. Very fast. 38.5-inch vertical jump. I think this is more important. 0.66 second three cone time, very quick. 6'3", 207 pounds. Good numbers. I don't know what he was like production wise in college though.
So he went to
his productivity.
Yeah, I mean, it was called Mims. Was a riser. He was off a lot of people's radar and then blew up the combine and the Senior Bowl previous to that. And he stepped on the scene. He's at 6'3", 197 pounds, wide wingspan, can catch the football. I would say a good now you brought up Alshon Jeffrey. This is the comp for Denzel Mims. The comps that I think are Alshon Jeffrey and Kenny Galladay. I mean, this is a super high upside, sure-handed guy who came out of Baylor. So Baylor wide receivers in the past, like Josh Gordon, I mean, some other ones didn't pan out, but Mims, I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up being one of the more productive guys. I think going to be a first.
I'm starting to get the sense that this is a combine special, maybe a guy that wasn't super productive in college.
Mims is the real deal. He was, if you want to hear, I'll look up his Baylor production while you're doing that. Why don't you look it up while I'm doing there. How much weight do you put on college production? Cause I don't weigh it as heavily. I don't weigh it as heavily as you do. Cause sometimes, and again, it's important. It is within, you know, production is there. Because sometimes it's competition, and going back to something we were talking about with running backs also, that was something that competition more so than production, because meaning do you produce against good teams? And that's why I like Dobbins. When we're talking about the running backs, that Dobbins was able to produce against the best teams, whereas Jonathan Taylor struggled against some of the bigger teams. So it's not just production, it's production against who. But Mims, like I said, was a player that was off fantasy, was off most people's radar, and at the Senior Bowl really came on, played well against his peers, and then had a great combine, and I think will be a first round pick. I could see Mims ending up in Green Bay was where I have him mocked to. They are thirsty for a second receiver opposite of Davante Adams. And how much would you like Mims if he lands in Green Bay, say in the first round?
Great landing spot. That's another one. That's another one of those situations where landing spot really is going to dictate. I mean, for me, wide receiver landing spot is super important anyway, and how high up they pick them. But I mean, we've seen a lot of second round wide receivers bust also. So the bust potential is massive. You need a good quarterback if you're going to succeed at the wide receiver spot.
Aaron Rodgers qualifies as a good quarterback. Right?
Yeah, he gets you the football, and they have targets in that offense. I think the negative from what I'm reading on Mims for the most part, I'm not a fan of the combine riser.
Well, I'll tell you why he's a combine riser, because he wasn't on anybody's mind heading in.
They're saying here's what I'm reading on him is that he had a limited route tree that he would run. Basically, all of his receptions came off of just four routes. Almost 30% of them were just fade routes. So he was just using his speed, go out there and catch the ball. That's great. You have talent. You're athletic. But what I don't see tied into Mims' name is elite route runner. And I want elite route runners first and foremost in the NFL. I think that the corner you're facing in the National Football League is just as fast as you are.
Yeah,
sure. Even if he's bad.
The tree was limited, but again, these guys develop a route tree as they go in. They don't come in when you're at this point of the draft in tier two, you're not coming. If you were an elite route runner, you would be in the first tier. This is something though, this guy can vertical high point and win in contested catches. And like I said, the catch radius is so big. He doesn't necessarily need to be with the most accurate quarterback. I'm just going to use Josh Allen, for example. Like Josh Allen's lack of accuracy would not adversely affect him because he has that catch radius. It doesn't have to be on the money for him to make plays. Mims is a guy that you should really be locking in to your radar screen because I think even in the wrong situation, he's one of these guys that can transcend that because he is so skilled.
What about my boy T. Higgins? Very cool name.
Yeah, T. Higgins is was
that's
an early.
That's not an acronym. That's his
no,
name.
No, his name is T. Higgins. Yeah, T. Higgins. He did not test at the combine. Okay, he was going to test at a pro day, and that knocked his stock down. Now he's a consensus top five to many sharp rankers. But again, his stock got pushed down a little bit. I think that he might be in the second round conversation for the real NFL draft, but you're smart to identify him because he might be one of those guys that you just steal. Like if you have pick 12 or pick 13, you know, pick 11 or 12 in your one QB draft and he falls there and you get him, you might have just gotten a top five overall player at that point. Again,
another 6'3 guy, not quite a monster, 6'3, 216 pounds, 4.43. Unofficial is what they're calling it.
Yeah, 40. Because he didn't test at the combine. Yeah,
he didn't test, and those numbers can fluctuate based on where you are and who's holding the stopwatch. Isn't it interesting they still do the stopwatch thing, even though technology?
Well, I don't think they do it at the combine.
No,
they
have computers also, but the scouts have the stopwatch in their hand because they want to pretend like they're busy.
You're right. That is kind of odd that they do that.
Yeah.
The
numbers, but they're still standing there with the stop. You know, like. Dude, you'll get the numbers after. Watch the guy. You know what I mean? I don't know. Yeah.
T. Higgins has as much upside as any of these guys. I think there's just some more question marks around him.
Was he productive in college?
Yeah. I mean, so you're weighing that pretty heavy. This seems to be a
productivity in college for me is very, very important because I don't like, you see, way too, the highest bust probability are the combine risers, the ones that were kind of under the radar. That's where you get your Kevin Whites. That's where you get your
Kevin White was a 1 year wonder in college. That's beware of that.
It's the Columbine. Remember, I forget the names because they're gone already. But like all of these names where you didn't, well, he ran 40 and he so many, you know, their athleticism was off the charts. And so they shoot up the draft board. That's like, is that, I'm trying to think if the guys that the Panthers took were that, or they were just big dudes, Funchess and Kelvin
Benjamin. Yeah. So like, T. Higgins last year, 59 catches, 1,160 yards, 13 touchdowns. So again, it plays right into what the profile I just talked about, which was big, lanky guy that can get it in the red zone. He played with the best quarterback in the nation in Trevor Lawrence, who should be the number one overall pick next year. There's a lot to love there. He's a big target, again, big catch radius. So T. Higgins is going to be one of those guys that gets pushed down draft boards, but you're going to get the value. So again, if you have pick 10, you have pick 12 in this year's draft, you won your league or you made it deep in the playoffs, and you're going to get a player like Higgins, man, I mean, that's like getting a top five pick in any other draft. This draft class is loaded, Geek.
I like it. All right, let's wrap it up right there. We've covered a good amount of the talent in the first round or the first round of your dynasty draft to be on the lookout for. But obviously, what happens in the actual draft, where these guys are drafted,
that's going to shake it all up
so much. It's going to shake everything up. So this is just preparation. All right, we're watching the draft in a couple weeks. This is just preparation. Like, all right, oh yeah, I remember him. Geek and Sess talked about him on the thing. Oh, that's a great landing spot. You know, some dynasty leagues will draft before the NFL draft, by the way.
No, that's crazy. Don't do that.
Don't be in a league like that. But other dynasty leagues will draft very soon after. And I do like that approach. A, it gives you something to do in like May when you don't have that much going on for dynasty purposes, trades, get all that going on. But once the landing spots are determined, you get a really good sense of which of these players are going to have a lot of opportunity, especially in your run. And the other thing is we're doing best ball leagues. And for best ball purposes, some of these guys will be overdrafted. Some will be underdrafted. Very, very important to keep that in mind. If last year you won your best ball league, if you drafted AJ Brown in the last round, and he was available in the last round. You know who else was available in the second to last round? Marquise Brown. Did he have a consistent year? No, but he gave you 4 weeks of 25 fantasy points. AJ yeah. Brown, was he consistent all year? No, but he was involved, and he got you big numbers.
And to your point, Mims and T. Higgins are two great last round best ball picks. You can get Mims or Higgins in that last round, second to last round, and those guys who are going to be going in similar places in your rookie draft to where A.J. Brown went last year, they fit that same profile. So
that's it. I want those kind of guys a lot more than I want, you know, Kiki Kuti in the hopes that, you know, they'll finally right. elevate him, or guys like that that we don't even know are going to be productive, and we've seen that they're not productive when they start. I'd rather have a guy who's a number two wide receiver for whatever team, like the Eagles
or the Packers are the two prime spots.
Eagles, Packers, but, Texans.
Yeah, but they're going to get a second. They could end up with T. Higgins. That's a realistic landing spot for T. Higgins.
You know, Will Fuller's only got three games before the hammy starts acting up.
Yeah,
fucking all Bill right, O'Brien. Man. He refuses to tell him to stretch the hammy. It's called, guys, spend 10 minutes before the game. A little hammy stretch. A little hammy.
Let's wrap.
All right. Let's wrap it up there. For myself and Season Long Says, Bolt Calls Podcast will be back regularly throughout the offseason. Try to do it once a week, breaking down everything that's going on for fantasy football purposes, for best ball purposes, and now the NFL draft coming up. We'll have another one of these right after the draft, analyzing the results.
Absolutely.
Ranking everything. And of course, if you're listening here, make sure you smash the like and subscribe button wherever you're listening. Podbean, YouTube, Apple, iTunes, all that stuff. We're everywhere. Bold Calls Podcast. And of course, if you're not currently a DFS Army subscriber, go to dfsarmy.com, get subscribed. You get all the fantasy football information you need, but more importantly, daily fantasy sports. We're doing esports right now. We're crushing League of Legends. We're crushing Rocket League. We're crushing CSGO because that's the only sports we've got. We're betting it. At some point, other sports will return, and we'll start crushing those too. But for now, we can scratch our itch, playing some best balls, talking some fantasy football, getting prepared for our dynasty drafts, and all that good stuff. So everybody stay safe. Keep your social distance. For myself, for Season Long Says, that's the Bold Calls Podcast. Take care, everyone.
Adios.